Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention?
Sage Rosenfels, the official Tuesday morning quarterback with Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi, longtime football observer.
I grew up with a little 19-inch black and white, I don't even know if it was 19 inches, it might have been 12 inches or something, black and white TV that had four channels. We basically watched the black and blue division. My dad's from Chicago. All we basically watched were Vikings, Packers, Bears, Packers.
12 years of NFL experience.
Rosenfels with the ball, the bootleg, fake the pass, dives for the end zone, and in for the touchdown. Sage Rosenfels, brilliant on that first drive.
Goat of the preseason.
It's a specialty.
Sage Rosenfels with Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Sage Rosenfels is brought to you by EOC Audio. They make today's home technology simple. Check them out at EOCAudio.com. He's on The Score hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And he is joining us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. A couple of quick updates. Not only is Yan Gomes a Chicago Cub at 2 years and $13 million. The Kendall Graveman signing that had been reported for the Chicago White Sox is now finally official. 3 years, $24 million for the 30-year-old reliever who found some swing and miss stuff, some missing of bats, and the White Sox hope they can sustain it. So they have officially done something. Also, if for Giving Tuesday, those of you texting in to donate to Camp One Step and helping kids with cancer, send to camp at score.givesmart.com. We're at $14,000, more than halfway to the $25,000 we need to make the match. And Sage is joining us. Hello.
Obviously, I should have played baseball. That's for, at this point in my life, I grew up playing a lot of baseball, a lot more baseball and basketball than football. I was never going to make it because I could barely dunk, but baseball, I saw that Max Scherzer deal where he basically is being paid more than about four major league franchises for next year. So I think I should have played baseball. Football worked out pretty well, but nice to make $40 million a year.
I don't know, man. QBs, Russell Wilson had the chance too, and Russell decided to go with football. So it's not a terrible decision you guys made there.
That's going to be the only time in the history of my life that I'll be compared to Russell Wilson. two different sports. And I always say, by the way, when we're talking about quarterbacks, which is obviously what I talk about a lot on this show and a lot of the shows I go on, I always say I don't think I would recruit or, you know, sort of draft a quarterback that didn't play a mix of baseball and basketball. I always say, if you can find me a basketball player that also plays baseball, I'm fairly sure I can make him into a quarterback. And quarterback is sort of a combination of the athleticism, I feel like, that you gain from the other sports and, of course, the throwing from baseball.
I wanted to ask you about the construction of the play calling that we saw on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. And I'm sorry if that ruined your turkey, having to watch those two teams play, the Lions and Bears. But the fact that they only ran the ball seven times in the first half. And I said to Dan in the last segment, you would never hear such a thing with the backup quarterback if it's anybody else other than Andy Dalton. And the takeaway I had was just that it's pretty obvious. Matt Nagy wasn't going to change that offense for Justin Fields, but he sure knew that Andy Dalton could run it. So all the plays that we expected him to run, we saw.
Well, yeah, you did see a little bit of a different offense, and Matt Nagy, he looks at the bubble screens and the RPO stuff that's run, and they run a lot of bubble screens. They probably ran three or so in this ball game. Sometimes even the jet sweep that is a toss forward ends up being a pass is very much a run. So I think they find different ways to sort of quote unquote run the football that is, you know, sort of in their own way. They obviously didn't run nearly the bootlegs that they were running before with Justin Fields. And so the offense became a little more of a pocket passer a type of offense. And all in all, I thought Andy Dalton played well in this ball game. You know, obviously there's the interception in the red zone on the sort of the seam route that was about 2 feet behind the wide receiver. He puts that ball out in front. It's a touchdown out in front to Bird, but it was just behind him. But other than that, after breaking down the film, I thought he played really well in this ball game, and obviously was a big reason why the Chicago Bears came out with a win on Thanksgiving.
Have you ever seen a team penalized for taking consecutive timeouts? Because I have to admit that I didn't really know it was a rule, and I was told that apparently the refs aren't supposed to let you take that second timeout, I guess, until you get just too demonstrative, and then they say, okay, you can have the timeout, but now I have to penalize you.
Yeah, you know, this was a game against a not very good football team and a really bad football team. And when you're a really bad football team, it's a mix of players and coaches. And this Lions team is really bad. You know, the Texans, who I also cover, they're the worst. They're the worst team, I think, in the NFL. I think they're even worse than the Lions. And, you know, in that situation, yeah, I have seen that before. The referees are not supposed to give the timeout, but yeah, I realize there's a lot going on. If a referee does give the timeout, they have to, you know, obviously have some sort of penalty for the team who's asking for two in a row. I think they try to prevent that sometimes for the, of course, the late in the game, they try to freeze the kickers. The coach doesn't call 2-3 timeouts in a row. That's where they have that rule. I think it's actually a good rule. I think it's sort of bad for the fans, bad for the viewers at home who are just sort of seeing through these multiple timeouts. If you can't figure out what play to call offensively or defensively without having to call multiple timeouts, you're not doing your job as a coach, as a defensive coordinator, as a head coach. And there were multiple times in this game where both teams called weird timeouts. Even at the end, as Chicago was trying to, with a quote unquote, center the football and put the football right in the middle of the hashes so it's the easiest field goal possible, they had to call timeouts, right? As Detroit was running off the field because they had too many guys in the field. I thought Detroit had called timeout. No, that was actually Chicago. I'm sitting there going like, you know, the center of the ball play, that is a very simple play that is practiced a lot. I mean, not necessarily like, you know, you practice 100 times, but you go through it during training camp. You go through it sometimes during a walkthrough, just a reminder. Everyone's done it probably since high school. Or you want to try to send that football, but yet somehow Chicago has to call a timeout in that situation. So there are a few blunders on both sides of football as far as you know, bad coaching is concerned as far as timeouts. But yeah, I have seen that once or twice in my life, and obviously that helped the Bears on that play when Detroit had to call two timeouts in a row.
What was your impression of just not just the rumor of Nagy potentially being fired during the week that came out, but how it was reacted to leading up to the actual game? It's a short week. As a player, you know the importance of preparation and how every hour seems to count if you have one of those Thursday games.
Yeah, you guys sort of dumped that on me last week on Tuesday at this time. And it's, you know, Matt Nagy is going to get fired at the after the game. And it's like, you know, what's the reaction and what are the players thinking? And so I'm scrambling in my mind when I've sort of been in those situations before. It's not easy. That is really where you rely on the veterans of the team, or I should say the veterans who have the right type of attitude. There are a lot of veterans out there who've been in the league for a long time, and they've seen enough things where they sometimes don't really care anymore. It's like, you know what, I've made my money, screw this, this team's going down, or whatever, I'm going to go somewhere else next year and be on a different team in a healthy organization in a few months from now, right? But then you also have those veterans who have been around a long time, who love playing for the Chicago Bears. They want to make it work. They have a lot of pride in what they do and who they are. And I think this team is full of them on both sides of the football. In particular, on defense. They've got a lot of really good, what I call glue guys, guys that you just want to have on your team that sort of keep the team together, whether you're winning or whether you're losing. They sort of keep the whole ship going forward. I do think Chicago has their fair share of guys. And, you know, whatever happens here at the end of this last month, this season, as we go into the offseason, those glue guys are going to be the ones who, if this team somehow gets turned around and becomes a playoff team of the future, it's going to be because of those glue guys who, you know, as someone once said to me, you don't grow unless you have conflict, right? Growth only occurs really in any situation in life when there is conflict. Of course, Chicago dealing with a lot of conflict right now, trying to figure itself out and what's going to go on in the future. But those players who fight through this, who have a lot of pride in what they do and who they are and how they play and what product is on the field, not just them, but their entire team, those are the types of guys that are going to lead the Chicago Bears team out of the tough situation that they're currently in.
If Justin Fields can't go, and I imagine he can't because broken ribs are a bitch, What is he missing right now at this stage of his development? I know it's still Matt Nagy. I know all the headwinds, but just the number of snaps, the snaps to prepare for a team like Arizona playing another game. It's just too bad. You know, regardless of any situation, if he's to me the most important player on the Bears, and everything that happens with him is more important than anything else, and it's killing me that he's not playing.
Well, first off, broken ribs or cracked ribs or fractured ribs are maybe like the worst of all the injuries. It's hard to even walk around. It's hard to breathe. Sure as heck is hard to throw. And yet he is missing out. He's missing out on these great opportunities. You know, in college football, if you don't go to a bowl game, your season's done Thanksgiving time, which means you basically miss out on about 4 to 5 weeks of practice as you lead up to those bowl games. And those are huge. Those are huge for the young guys. Those are huge for the guys who are redshirting that didn't step on the field at all. You know, they got an extra month of practice. And obviously Justin Fields is missing this game action, but he's very much missing a lot of this practice time. That is really important. And, you know, I just saw the Jets with their young quarterback. You know, he's out there. He's hurt. He's playing, and they got a win this weekend down in Houston. But those game moments, those practice moments, those are really important for a young guy to keep getting better at their craft. And so, yeah, him being injured, this definitely does not help his progression to be a really good starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears.
We did see something encouraging talent-wise, not just out of the 300-yard game from Dalton that you mentioned, but also Darnell Mooney getting over 100 yards. I know the Lions' pass defense is nothing to write home about, but it's still up to them to produce. What did you see out of Mooney?
I think Mooney's a Pro Bowl type player. I don't know how the voting is going to come down. We're getting to that point in the season where they have that voting. But, man, he has been consistently, in my opinion, the best offensive player for Chicago this year. He's been the guy they go to on a lot of third downs. He's also been the big play guy. And, yeah, he's been extremely valuable to this offense. You obviously saw the big play in this game. You do have to have a couple really, really fast guys on your football team. You like to have two receivers who can really fly, and they like to have two guys who can, you know, who are the guys who understand space and understand how to, you know, get 4 yards on the third and two and get a little separation in small areas. But Mooney's one of those guys that can really fly, and you sort of saw that speed on that inside seam route, that sort of deep post route across the field, really almost a perfect throw by Dalton there. And, you know, I thought Troy Aikman said it best. You have guys that can really run, you almost never overthrow those types of players. You let it go, and you hope you don't underthrow him. So he's a really good player. We saw, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, he took that little bubble screen for about 50, 60 yards for a touchdown. So he really has turned into one of the better wide receivers in the NFC North, and obviously got Davante Adams in Green Bay. And after that, I think Mooney's right up there with him, Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, and obviously Adams. And so, yeah, he's becoming a very, very good wide receiver for the Chicago Bears offense. And if he goes down, man, they don't have a lot of juice on the outside other than him right now.
If you're following along on Twitch, you can see Sage Rosenfels, who's in his little dig me room there. He's got the Vikings helmet. There's, I think, the Vikings jersey. What is creeping me out there over your left shoulder? There's like a Donnie Darko vibe of a, is that a mascot head or what is that?
Well, I have a, I guess it's a movie room or a TV room above my garage, and try to sort of turn it into a little bit of an office. You know, you watch ESPN or NFL Network with all the Zooms that have been going on over the last couple years, and I didn't really have one of those. So I sort of created my own little space, and I thought, well, you have to put something really weird in your space just to throw off the, yeah, somebody that's watching.
It.
So, yeah, this is a $7 Halloween purchase a couple of years ago. It's I think it's an alpaca. I'm not really sure, but it's on a helmet. It's on semi Iowa State helmet. So yeah, everyone. I feel like all these analysts and reporters, they have these very sort of bland backgrounds. I think you have to throw something in there just to throw the viewers off.
Yeah, that thing's it's kind of menacing. Like that, it looks like it means ill to like something bad is going to happen if you leave it alone. Once that door closes,
it's keeping an eye on everybody.
Okay.
That's what it's doing. It's keeping an eye on everybody. Yeah, I think it's an alpaca.
So you're also wearing an Iowa State hat, and with the news about Brian Kelly, are you worried about the status of Matt Campbell at Iowa State?
Of course, as an Iowa State alumni and Iowa State, you know, former quarterback and fan now, I know we have one of the better coaches in college football. I know a lot of teams want to come in and take him away from us. I know a lot of NFL teams would like to take him away. I know a year ago, around this time, the Detroit Lions offered him an 8-year, $68 million deal, and he turned it down, right? That's sort of crazy. $8.5 million a year, and he turns it down. And everyone always says, you know, with Matt Campbell, there's really only a few teams that maybe he would leave Iowa State for. I don't think he really wanted to go to the West Coast. He's not a West Coast guy. He's from Ohio. He's a very much a Midwestern guy. I really don't think he wants to go to the SEC because it's just so nuts down there. And you go take this job and you don't win in a couple of years and you're out of there. I think he feels very secure at Iowa State. You know, he's married with 4 kids and it's a great place to raise a young family. But when Notre Dame comes calling, that is a little different than, you know, than even USC or something in the SEC that doesn't really fit the Matt Campbell profile. Notre Dame is right up his alley. And obviously I know there's a ton of Notre Dame fans in the Chicago metro. If he ends up going there, it's, you know, it would not be a surprise to me. And I would hate to see him go. You know, Notre Dame has much deeper pockets than Iowa State. He's making about $4.5 million a year as the Iowa State head coach. And maybe our athletic director, Jimmy Pollard, could bump that up a couple of $1 million. But, you know, you see Brian Kelly making $15 million at LSU. And I don't think he's going to make $15 million, whoever the next Notre Dame coach is. But obviously that number with the Fighting Irish is probably going to be higher than what the Cyclones can really afford. And so that's what scares me. But I also know that Matt Campbell's not a guy who coaches for the money. He just isn't. I've gotten to know him well enough that he understands the big picture in life, the relationships, the control that he sort of has with Iowa State, as far as he gets to sort of do whatever he wants in Ames, Iowa, and with that program. They want to wear black jerseys. Black's not even a color for Iowa State. Sure, you can wear black jerseys, Matt Campbell, because – you are, you know, a great coach. Can you do that at Notre Dame? I don't think so. They have so many prior restrictions and things over there in South Bend that he probably wouldn't get to sort of run the show as he wanted. But they're going to throw some big numbers at some coaches, and my guess is Matt Campbell is very high on that list.
Sage Rosenfels is nothing if not a realist, and always appreciate the perspective and look forward to talking next week.
Good to have you guys. Good to be on again, guys. I appreciate it.
We appreciate you, Sage. Thank you.
That is Sage Rosenfels. And next up, Paul Charchian is going to figure out the wacky NFL when it comes to what is best for your fantasy team as we get closer to the fantasy football playoffs. Also want to mention we'll get an update on the Giving Tuesday donations in just a bit for Camp One Step from Children's Oncology Services and our effort to today send 50 kids with cancer to a week of real camp in the woods. And if you've seen it before, and if you know what this means for kids to get out of the hospitals for a time, and so many of the doctors at Lurie Children's and elsewhere just say, absolutely, no matter what, you're going to camp, because we have the best medical professionals there, and they can still be on their chemotherapy regimens. They can still do everything that's needed because of our top-of-the-line care, but they can take off their prosthetics, and they can jump in the lake, and they can go fishing, and they can roll around in the mud, and they can be with other kids and counselors who have been through what they have been through. It is just a wonderful, joyful, joyful place, and we want to make sure that every kid who has an opportunity to go, who wants to go, that we can say yes, and we're doing that right now in large part because of the match that is being presented by the Ellen Marks Cancer Foundation. All you have to do is text SCORE to 76278 or go to score.givesmart.com. On Twitch, Connor O'Donnell's created a command that lets you click on the score.givesmart link. All you have to do is type in !give in the chat, and that will auto-generate a link for you to donate and have your donation matched. Charge is next on the Score.
Paul Charchian, Fantasy Football Hall of Famer.
That guy must really know what he's doing.
Chief Execution Officer at GuillotineLeagues.com.
He's appointing himself Judge, Jury, and Executioner.
He's not Judge, Judy, and Executioner.
He is.
Your guide through the waiver wire.
Hurry, hurry, step right up and keep following the leader.
Charge. With Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Talk some fantasy football with Charts. Let me let you know latest update. We're at $20,000 right now. 20.
Yay.
Awesome. As we raise money for Camp One Step to help kids with cancer and leukemia attend our 11 free in-person programs and all of it. For this year, we've already done 8 virtual programs so far. We want to keep doing both because we can include so many more people, and it takes a lot more money to do that. So if we can hit 25,000, we've got another 30 minutes to get that $5,000. And if we can get to it, that's going to end up sending 50 kids with cancer to actual in-person camp for a week. And that's just going to get us started for our big holiday push. So thank you for that. Let's talk fantasy football with Paul Charchian. He's at Paul Charchian, Chief Execution Officer at GuillotineLeagues.com, KFan, Fantasy Sports Hall of Famer. And Charge, as we start looking at this league right now, what the hell is going on with running backs?
What a disaster the running back position has been. And if you spend a first-round pick on a running back, you're probably in trouble. Dan, Layla, let's just zip through the carnage here. Christian McCaffrey, he was a first overall pick in virtually every league, a disaster season for the second time in a row. Dalvin Cook has been sidelined three different times this year. Derrick Henry, season-ending injury in week 8. Alvin Kamara has played only 8 games so far. Nick Chubb has missed 3 games. Zeke has been deeply underperforming. We might talk about him a little bit later. Saquon Barkley, his last touchdown was week 4, and his last game with more than 57 rushing yards, which is not much, was year 2019. And then Cam Akers at the end of the first round, dead before the season started. The only running backs that were going in the first round, and not even all these guys went in the first round, Jonathan Taylor, Austin Eckler, Aaron Jones are the only guys who have been healthy and productive through most of this season. Meanwhile, if you'd have gone away from the running back position, the other 4 players who were going in first rounds that weren't running backs, Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs, Travis Kelce, it's all worked out for them.
It was ridiculous to watch Nick Chubb only get 16 yes. yards on Sunday night. That was one of the most surprising things about the weekend.
Yes, and so interestingly, Cleveland goes from playing Baltimore, then they go to their bye this week, then they go back to Baltimore. So, you know, Nick Chubb's going to have to try to overcome the same exact thing for fantasy players coming up in a couple of weeks, and you can't really bench him, but you can't feel good about starting him again against the same team that just held him to 16 yards.
So what happens with the Cowboys and how they're going to distribute snaps at that position?
This is becoming really a heated issue. Ezekiel Elliott just doesn't look that great. There are some media reports out there saying that they may rest Zeke for this Thursday night game because he's clearly banged up and he's not playing very well. And then there are others, we've seen other media reports saying exact opposite, that they want to give him a big workload here. But the reality is Tony Pollard's just better. He's just better. Pollard right now is Pro Football Focus's number 4 ranked running back. Zeke is running back 29. Pollard is ahead of Zeke in all of these metrics. Well, really every rushing metric, but I'll highlight a few. Yards after contact, long gains, and elusiveness. Pollard's ahead of Zeke in all of those metrics. And since week five, Zeke's averaging 3.5 yards per carry. Pollard against those exact same teams over the exact same stretch is almost a full extra yard better per carry. And then just look at him. Just use your eyeballs and look at Zeke and look at Pollard. Pollard clearly, last year he looked like the better back. This year it looked like he looked like the better back. It's not inconceivable here that this 70-30 timeshare that we've seen to this point at some point over the rest of the season ends up flipping 70-30 the other way to Pollard.
Well, they still didn't rush the ball enough, either one of them. I mean, only 64 yards total in the late game on Thursday. That's not going to get you anywhere, at least as far as fantasy numbers are concerned. We've talked about the Seahawks all season long, and I know it has been a point of stress for team owners. What do you make of what's left of them? How do you assess this? It's problematic.
How do you start any Seahawks anymore? DK Metcalf was the one guy you felt reasonably safe starting. He had his first catch in minute 59 of last night's game. And it's been a disaster scenario. And it all really starts with Russell Wilson, who has been incredibly non-productive. And over the last 16 games, he's averaging barely 220 passing yards. He's roughly on track with Sam Darnold's production over the last year and a half of service. So it's been really a disaster for Russ. And in fairness to Russ, the offensive line's bad, and there's no running game to take any heat off him. But I am of the opinion that they're going to melt down this team, and this offseason is going to be the last for the Russell Wilson era of the Seahawks. Do you see it that way? There's a team that rolls into this draft without a first-round pick because of that terrible Jamal Adams trade that they made, and I think they're going to have to recoup some equity on Russ. And he wanted to leave last offseason.
Yes.
He saw the writing on the wall. I think they're going to let him leave, and they're going to melt this thing down. What do you think?
I think it becomes what they think they can get for him in a potential trade. And if they got any information last year that might apply to this year in that offseason you discussed, where we in Chicago were certainly wanting to know if he wanted to come here. Yeah. But, you know, those draft picks, if you look at us for an example here in town, there's not a lot of teams that have ones they want to trade.
Yeah, there are scenarios out there where Philadelphia, for example, if they decide Jalen Hurts, who is, by the way, Jalen Hurts hasn't topped 179 passing yards in 5 weeks. And 179 is nothing, right? So here's Philadelphia sitting with three first-round picks. That might be a potential target. Maybe Pittsburgh, who's got to find cobble together some succession plan. Maybe they're a candidate for Russell Wilson. I think there are going to be teams out there that are going to look at Wilson favorably and feel like he immediately keeps a team like Pittsburgh or Philadelphia relevant in the next season.
Talking fantasy football with Paul Charchian on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And also you can check him out on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. A friend of ours tweeted something out recently looking at Taysom Hill's deal and said, someone's going to have to explain Taysom Hill to me. So then we all snapped into joke mode, and some people were making Revolutionary War jokes, making references to Bunker Hill or Breed's Hill. I chose the musical avenue and mentioned that Taysom Hill is Peter Gabriel's story of how he left Genesis and how he was confronting the mixed emotions of a solo career. And what do you make of what the future holds, regardless of how it is contractually? I don't know if they really know what he is. It seems like a constant effort to make him be allowed to think he is what he is.
Isn't it weird?
Yes.
How the whole thing has been strange. So he got the four starts at the end of last year and ran the ball well in those four starts. And they rolled into this year and he's third string and he can't beat out Jameis Winston and Trevor Siemian. When you can't beat out Trevor Siemian, apparently you can't be trusted to be a quarterback in the league. And then to drop a $40 million contract on that guy, it makes no sense. He was averaging 13 snaps a game and 4 touches a game and $40 million. It's baffling. Now, but just from a pure fantasy standpoint, this is one of those real cases where fantasy and reality do not match at all. Because from a fantasy standpoint, Taysom Hill is kind of a goldmine. In those four starts last year, he was a top 10 fantasy quarterback in three of the 4 weeks because he averaged 53 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown per game. That makes him this year's James Conner for the Cardinals, a guy who's scoring at a clip of a touchdown, rushing touchdown a game, and he's been a very good rusher. The passing's never been great with Hill. He topped 233 passing yards in three of those four starts, though, and he threw two touchdowns in half of the four starts. So there's a little something you could get out of Taysom Hill from a fantasy standpoint, but from a real-life quarterback standpoint, he's not good.
Are you seeing any potential sleepers for anybody?
Well, from the waiver wire, I think there's a lot of activity at the running back position, Layla. So Chuba Hubbard's your new starting running back with Christian McCaffrey out. He wasn't great before, and they're on bye, but you're going to have to roster him. Alexander Mattison's your new starting running back for the Vikings for at least 2 weeks, might be 3 weeks with Dalvin Cook out, and he was very productive. His two full games as the starting running back for the Vikings, he was a top 10 fantasy running back in both. Jamal Williams will be your starting running back for Detroit this week against a Vikings run defense that's been really battered and ineffective. So those are all guys you could pick up. Taysom Hill, we mentioned. And we don't normally talk about waiver wire pickups at tight end. Frank Moreau, the Las Vegas backup tight end behind Darren Waller, is probably the best backup tight end of the league. And in the one game he had to fill in for Waller earlier this year, put up 6 catches, 60 yards, and a touchdown. And he'll run all of the Waller routes, and you could pick him up and start him for at least 1 week with Darren Waller out.
And we can continue to make ham-fisted Island of Dr. Moreau references that four people understand on Twitter.
That's the best part of it, right? Right there.
Of course, I am not one of the four.
As long as we can entertain ourselves, that's what it's about. Charge, thank you as always. Appreciate
it. Hey, if I want to make a donation to this this wonderful charity that I've heard you now describing for the past couple of segments, tell me where I go and what I need to do.
It is so nice of you to ask. If you would like to help kids with cancer and leukemia enjoy the simple joys of childhood and help us at Children's Oncology Services do what our mission says we do, and that is empower kids who have cancer, encouraging them to take on the world. What you can do today on Giving Tuesday, if you would like your gift matched by the generous Ellen Marks Cancer Foundation, you can go to score.givesmart.com or text SCORE to 76278. And that way, as so many of these medical outcomes are improving and we have so many more kids doing better despite having pediatric cancer, that we can send all of them into the woods and they can paddle canoes and they can fish and they can be part of all of our regular programs, our virtual programs. They can go skiing down a mountain and they can do whitewater, whatever they want to do. This is how we help them do it.
Fantastic. score.givesmart.com. I'm in for $100.
Oh, awesome,
wow.
Man.
Right.
That just became 200 thanks to the Ellen Marks Cancer Foundation. That's how it's done. Paul Charchian, thank you.
Thank you, really.
Thanks, Charge.
That's Paul Charchian. This has been a hell of a day already. Looking forward to an update on how we are heading toward that match as wild things are popping off all over sports. What do you make of the Wilson Contreras tweet of emoji airplane taking off, airplane landing, airplane taking off, airplane landing?
I just think he's venting, but he probably can't say what he really wants to say, so he just says that instead. Also, if he thinks he's going somewhere, just tell us.
Let's break that down when we come back, because there are Cub fans who are getting kind of up in arms over what the Yan Gomes signing may mean for Wilson Contreras.
Yeah, I also like your observation of irrational confidence, though.
Oh, baseball players with irrational confidence?
I think it needs to be discussed.
All right, we'll do that too on the score.
All right, I got to confess something. I did a disservice here when I was irrationally angry about Just Max Scherzer. So the Robbie Ray signing is now official, and now I'm irrationally angry about Robbie Ray.
Sox should have signed
him. The Sox should have signed Robbie Ray. You mean to tell me you don't have 5 years, $115 million for the Cy Young winner? That he went to the Mariners? I don't even know what the heck is happening in the AL West. I can't even feel good as a Texas Rangers fan. Because They stole everybody's infielder.
Yes, you can. No, go ahead.
No, because Houston is still there and the White Sox.
So what? If you can't be happy with this, but $500 million, when are you going to ever be?
I'm sorry. I was there for the A-Rod contract. How did that turn out?
Not bad, actually. Not as
yes,
bad.
Yes, it was. No, they were still paying the Yankees after they traded an MVP.
But look at the value. Look at it by war value. It's not as bad as you think.
War value doesn't translate into wins for a terrible Texas Rangers team. And the whole point is everybody's still going to get whooped by the Astros. But if you add Robbie Ray,
that's a bad deal,
if
though.
You add Robbie Ray to the White Sox, if you add Robbie Ray to the White Sox, now you're talking. They had 5 years and 115.
Easily. Got a lot more than that. Because any team can sign any of these guys for this money. That's the truth.
And I know I talked about Scherzer, but as I read the official deal now, because it is official with Robbie Ray and the Mariners, I'm just like, man, and Adam Frazier. Like, if I said to Mike Rankin and Rick during the break, If they make those two deals, game on.
Priority, starting pitching, second base, and I guess you could go right field, even backup catcher.
And I love all of you. But until we figure out what Michael Kopech really is as a starting pitcher, this is not a lockdown deal by any means. We have to see it happen first. And that's not, you don't gamble when you're trying to win a World Series like that.
Steve Stone has mentioned it too.
You have a backup.
And he said, if you're going to be a starter, you're going to need variation in some of your velocities as much as variation in some of your locations. And that is that's a priority. Like a lot of things have to happen. If the White Sox stand pat, even if they do spend a little money here and there, they got to get smarter and they got to get better. Like their actual pieces that they currently have and the way they play baseball all has to improve already.
Remember all the talk about like respect and stuff too, of just like, you know, really respect this team as a contender, all that type of stuff. Well, then you know what you have to do? Back it up.
How about you? Tim Anderson can come on these airwaves and he can tell Danny Parkins, hell yeah, you know, we're the best effing team in baseball, the best effing team in the American League.
They were not the best team in the American League.
They weren't.
They were in the first half somewhat.
And they're not right now.
But guess what? Division just put you on notice because Javi Baez is now playing in Detroit.
All right, bottom line, you don't make much of the Wilson Contreras passive-aggressive acting out on Twitter.
Yeah, because I don't, this stuff doesn't bother me. Like, Wilson probably wants to say some stuff and he can't. And he should, as the catcher and the veteran, be the leader of that team. And if you feel like you're stifled, goodness knows we've got mics for you. I don't think you're leaving town because they signed Yan Gomes.
$6.5 million a year for 2 years.
But if you're concerned about it, I think that's worth voicing. Just for you, for us, for everyone. I don't mind Wilson Contreras, though, being Wilson Contreras. That's the thing.
He's never going to stop doing that, I don't think.
But you know what I'm saying. Yeah. He talks, and there's a reason people listen. It's because he commands a room. So, like, you own that dopeness and know that people are going to listen to what you say. But when you say stuff that's interesting, you know, we're listening to you. The irrational confidence is my favorite thing you've talked about all day, and we haven't even talked about on the show.
I just got a kick out of this. And this is right-handed pitcher Michael Lorenzen, who had been with the Reds, and, you know, he had something of a reputation as a not terrible hitter. Decent hitter.
For a pitcher.
Good athlete, decent hitter for a pitcher. And as he headed into free agency, he and his agent were putting it out there that he, Michael Lorenzen, wanted an opportunity for regular at-bats.
In the American League.
That he saw what Shohei Ohtani was doing, and he realized that that's value added. That guy could pick up a stick, and he could matter, and he was going to give you war value as a pitcher and as a position player. You know what? Shoot your shot. See if somebody's going to bite. Go ahead and do that. Well, Michael Lorenzen ended up signing a one-year deal at $7 million with the Angels. He says we already have got one.
I want to be the Shohei Ohtani of the Angels. Wait.
It's very nice.
Hold on a second.
That would work out very well. Not only do we have a Shohei Ohtani, this is the one team that actually has the Shohei Ohtani. And I would love it if he arrives, if Shohei's like, Michael, come on over here. You want to get in the cage and we'll do a little hitting together, see how this goes for you. I mean, my God, of course. But see, think about how that had to happen. Like the agent calls is like, hey, Mike, no one's really biting on the whole hitter thing. Really? What's my best deal about that? What? Well, $7 million is pretty good money. Well, where is it? Yeah, don't worry about that right now.
It also gets a little more drunk when you realize that the National League is probably also going to have DHs coming up. Oh, don't worry about that.
Should have waited. Damn it. Well, you do what you can do. I admire him for trying, even though it might have not been ideal. We will do Transition with Lawrence Holmes next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.